Hey, Suze.
Hey, Jacqueline. Do I have it right? I think. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah, for 1 second I heard an echo, but I think that was when Dawn was still unmuted. So I think we're good to go. It's nice.
Did I unmute everyone?
No, we'll let them, when they have a question, they can raise their hands or type on the board. I'm not sure. I'm trying to get a view where I can see them when they do that. Dawn, whom you know, is our sanctuary director, and she will help keep us apprised if anybody has a question.
Yeah, got it. Okay, very good.
Yeah, well, it's been a long time since I've seen you.
I know. Thank you. Welcome back.
Good. Yeah, great to see you. In fact, our last sad song was in January of 2016.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Your hair is real cute like that, by the way. I really like it.
You know, I'm a gardener, so it's just summertime. Chop it off. Thank you.
Yeah, it looks great.
Yeah.
So let me introduce you to folks. This is Suze Wicks. When I asked Suze for her latest bio, she responded very succinctly, but let me tell you what she said. She said that seeking confirms that one feels a loss, something missing, a separateness that needs to be fulfilled. Seeking is the search and belief that something has to be better than what is, or something better is attainable. That is why the position of a seeker is complete and pure, just as it is. No, let me try it again. I skipped a whole line in there, so I didn't think that sounded right. So let me try again. I might not want to hear this. This is why I read it wrong. Seeking is the search and belief that something has to be better than what is, or something better is attainable. That is why the position of a seeker is endless. Everything that is appearing in every nanosecond is always whole, complete, and pure, just as it is. One has to make this discovery for oneself. Living life with no explanation is living life as unconditional love. And we're going to get into that. I also want to say that if you want to know more about Suze, if you want to see her writings, you can go to her website. Her blog is suzewicks.blogspot.com. Is that correct, Suze?
That's correct, yeah.
All right, good.
And I'm on Instagram now, too, as well.
Oh, okay. Good. I don't know a thing about, I am not tech savvy in that area. Do they need to know anything to follow you on Instagram?
No, you know, you can go right on it and I'll hit accept or whatever. I'm not that savvy myself, so.
But they would look for you by your name.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, good. And Dawn has posted your email and your blog address here in the chat.
Thank you. So,
yeah. And, this morning when I talked about our getting together tonight, I talked about the last time, we had spoken, we were talking about the spiritual search that we all come to, sooner or later. And so, I was, kind of contrasting that with you saying, no, don't search.
Well, you know, it's once you're smitten, once you have that, once it's percolating, it's impossible to stop the search. It just is. That's part of it. What happens is in the search is that you're looking for something that's going to give you what you're searching for. Either you've read about it, heard about it, you've had an experience about it. Either way, you want more, or you want to have an understanding, or it's just a pull. It's such a pull to who you are that it's impossible. I mean, you may stop seeking, you may turn around and do a lot of different things. You may get totally pissed off and just, you know,
quit.
It's done. You know, I can't do it anymore, but you return to it. You return to it. It's that, it's a bit undescribable, but what happens is that the one that wants it, is what the veil is.
Yeah.
So that me that desires it, that seems to be aware of it, or knows it, but just can't quite get its hands on it because the me is the cloak itself.
Yeah.
So even though I had experiences, and that's usually what happens, there's like the bang, you know, the awakening or something, because everyone's different, you know, all the me's are different, you know, yeah. Uniquely different how it happens. And one of the things is that it becomes futile in the search. You never get there. You may get a temporary satisfaction, or you may have your ha-ha, or not ha-ha, well, ha-ha, or ha-ha moments, or whatever you want to call them.
Right.
Because you're always going to the next. You're always hopping to the next. You will always hop to the next. And then even when it starts to come into you that, I'm what's in the way. Mm. So how does the me get rid of the me? It doesn't. It can't do that.
Right.
So that's what's called the mystery, or the what's the other word they use a lot? When you can't figure it out, whatever, that doesn't matter. But so you're kind of a bit in a pickle, you know. It comes to like, okay, I have to get rid of me. Okay, how do I get rid of me?
Right. Yeah.
Me can't get rid of me because we have a self-built-in mechanism for survival. You know, babies when they're first born, you know, out of the womb, they're like this. You know, the survival mechanism is important to have a body. Got to do that, you know, or else you're just going to step in front of a bus, you know, kind of thing. So you have the survival mechanism that's going on. At the same time, it becomes all embodied. That I'm a me and I have identity and I'm a separate self. You're here and I'm there. This is my family. This is my space, so on and so forth. And then, of course, we live in a world with 7 billion me's, where they're all their identity, trying to achieve and grow and develop and be something or find meaning and purpose. So you're full on. And because we have this incredible body that has the sensories, which are incredible because it allows us to really know what form is. If you didn't have something to tell you that it was solid, you wouldn't know form. A form would be impossible. So smelling, tasting, touching, eating, all those things, seeing, hearing, allow form to be what it is and allow the beauty, the aliveness of form to take place. Okay? So that's... But what happens is that, I don't know how it all happens, but it happens that the separation comes in. And so all those feelings and sensories become, you know, exploded me. You know, I feel this, I know this because I've tasted it, my senses tell me this. So really, the me just is voluminous. So that's why the search and the seeking has an intensity to it. The dismantling of it appears to take time, but because you have to turn around and begin to see how it's layered, how it plays out, you know, why it's in place and what put it in place. So, I mean, even if you get the whack and you completely wake up, you still have to make an adjustment, if I can call it that.
You mean of how to be in the world?
Well, you're in the world, but not of the world, and that's what's known. But yes, in that sense, then yeah, you're clear that you're not, you know, of the world, and how you move about in it, what really happens? Because everybody, you look the same. You look like this. I look like the same Seuss going to work to the same day, no matter what is going on internally.
Right.
But what's incredible is that it already is incredibly perfect. All of it. Even when the pain arises, even when the sadness arises or a memory comes in, it's all part of everything. It is all part of the absolute. So the expression, no matter how horrific, tragic, sad, beautiful, tender, endearing, they are all the infinite, absolute expression. And of course, it would be infinite. So in that infinite, you could understand that there's going to be diversity to the infinite.
You mean all the me's you were talking about, the diversity?
All of it, yeah. No matter what shit happens, it's still all of it. It's still all of it. And there's, I can't say it's a relief, but in some ways it's like, of course, infinite absolute diverse expression would include, there's nothing to exclude.
Right.
But then you attach a separatism, a separate self, me, that takes the story or takes an experience and has a story from the experience, which we do. There's nothing wrong with our stories. It's just that there's no me. They're not my stories. They're not a personal story. They're stories.
Yeah. Something you said reminded me of the way that Paul Hederman describes it, and he talks about how do you get out of somewhere that you've never been, simply by realizing that you've never been there, that you're not there, right? It's not like something you got to get out of. And the other thing that occurs to me is the way that this turning from seeking seems to me like the call is to become curious about what's really going on here.
Well, you know, I'll say something about the seeking. In what happens to most of us is that we try to become a better me, a more moral me, a more spiritual me, a kinder me, a more caring me. The ability to step out of me and think of others and stuff. And, you know, that's a real trap type situation. And that can go on for a long time.
Yeah.
And it does for many of us. And maybe not, but that seems to happen. That seems to happen that if I can awaken, or if I can drop the me or whatever and become enlightened, then my life will be better. You know, it will be more peaceful. I will have that. I will have an understanding. No matter what happens, I'll be able to handle it. And because that's what the me is always doing. It's always operating for a better experience.
Yeah.
It just is. It will. Because the separate isn't separate. So even the contracted idea that I'm separate will have a, it's going to have a, you know. It's going to want to bust out.
No matter if you're separate. Fabulous separate, right? Even if I'm the best person that ever lived, there's still that sense of separateness.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. That's exactly right. So there'll always be a contracted energy there for it. You can't fool, you know, you might be able to fool millions or people around you, but you don't fool yourself. You still feel it. You'll still feel an ache. You'll still feel it. You'll know it. I think one of the things is, how do you know there's no more me? How do you know your me is gone?
Good question. Tell us.
This is really good. good. Yeah. That's a tricky answer too. So I try to be careful with my words. Me would always be bothered by something, or me would have an opinion about something, or me would have a judgment about something. The me would be, me has an energy, you know, you feel it either the stomach or the heart, or, you know, feel it in different parts of the body, but the me is always on the run. So you're going to feel it somewhere. It's always on the go. It works very hard to get its life as manageable as possible, as comfortable as possible, as right as possible. When that's gone, or it seems to me as it begins to shrink and dissolve, the body actually becomes lighter. Things just become lighter. It's not, there isn't me running the show anymore. There isn't a me that carries any of this anymore. It just goes on. The day goes on. It hasn't been for me like bliss, amazing. It's just been quiet, beautiful, but not in the beautiful, in the way I would have used the word beautiful, you know, not quiet in the way I would have used the word quiet. It isn't like, I mean, I've always watched birds because I've been drawn to nature always. So that's just something natural for me to do, but it may be just, the sound of the foghorn. You know, there isn't anything going on looking for something. Oh, let me go take a picture and put it on my, you know. I can't wait to share what I just saw. And the thing is like, that's okay too. Like all of it is okay. So how the me is not the me, how it's not there anymore. For me, it was visceral. It was a lighter weight. And then it just, there isn't an interest. Things fall away. They just simply fall away. There's no need for anything to be better. Doesn't mean I don't plan. I'm still plan for things.
Well, let me ask you, Sue, have you had a change in, I don't know what to call it, in your experience? I mean, it sounded like, you know, the text that we started with last time and the text we're starting with this time are very different.
Yeah.
Oh, so yeah. I assume since then there you have had some kind of shift.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, it's weird. I don't, you know, I don't know of a word shift. I would have to just say the me falling away, peeling away, peeling away, peeling away, peeling away. Because when it gets all peeled away, what's left is what has always been there.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. As opposed to a shift. Yeah.
So, but I get what you're saying. I mean, I understand what you're saying. But I've also learned that, you know, I've taken other teachers' words and stuff, and I just realize how important it is if you can just be careful with the words, what we're pointing to.
Yes.
To be as clear as possible and clarify in another different way if it's not clear. That's what's good about questions and stuff.
Yeah, thank you. And we'll certainly give folks an opportunity to ask questions. Go ahead, Suze.
Yeah, and then I also think, like, I was raised very, you know, strict Catholic kind of thing, you know, 13 sisters and brothers. So just to give you a reference to that. And we took care of the little church that was there. So we're very involved. And, you know, so my character, you know, got disenchanted with the church because I was a girl and, you know, couldn't be on the altar. But my brothers that were jackasses could, you know, I could never figure that stuff out. But I realized all of this isn't spiritual in the context of how I would have viewed spirituality some time ago. Mm-hmm. Because when things occurred to me, I was not involved in anything at all other than, every Sunday we had to walk in the woods. That was my church, you know, kind of thing. So I realized that it wouldn't be under any umbrella anyways, because if everything is whole, already happening within the absolute. Yeah, you can name it, but it wouldn't matter. It doesn't need a name.
Yeah.
So I realized, you know, we look to the spiritual communities because that is the place where you start to move inward. At least that's many of the different teachings and so on and so forth. And books, if you read them and listen, is moving inward. But I also realize that if it's an inward movement to improve the me or for the me to make its discoveries, then, you know, that's a roundabout. That's a, you know. Loser, you're not going to happen. I don't know. You know, it doesn't.
But isn't that a road most of us walk down? I mean,
Yeah. I'm not saying it's necessary. Gosh, I wish it wasn't necessary. But yeah, it is. Well, because that's in most cultures, that's where you're going to go, is in what you would call a spiritual community.
Yeah.
Because that's where you're going to have to look. It doesn't mean that that's it.
Right.
You know, you talk to scientists and talk to others, and it happens in a different way
for them.
Yeah.
I mean, they may be looking at the quantum field, right?
Could be.
I've always seen a lot of similarities in the quantum physics.
Well, we all do. We all come to the same point. You know, we all meet there. So, and artists and musicians.
Yeah, yeah. I see that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, let me ask you, what do you think brought about your... you know, I don't even know what to call it, but I'll call it a recognition.
Yeah, I would say the way it appeared was multiple unfoldings. Okay, just multiple unfoldings. Jack O'Keefe's work, totally. You know. I love her line, "No one's walking, walking's happening," you know?
Yeah.
Kind of thing, you know? I would say that Tony Parsons, what does he say? It's just what's happening. Right. What's happening? I mean, when he has very simple phrases, very simple lines, but when he said it was like hit the nail on the head. I've always, finding the language, because to me there is no language for it. There's no language whatsoever, only to point to it.
Yes.
So when Jack and Tony Parsons spoke, I was like, yeah.
Well,
those are the words I would use. So, but there were many things that moving on the way, you know, I stayed with the Course in Miracles for nearly 30 years, you know, it was certainly, you know, it was great. I've, you know, read Krishnamurti's, and when I would do any of this and the me was doing any of it, it was always repetitious, you know, always repetitive.
You mean the practice?
The readings. Yeah. And the practice is always. Yeah. Yeah.
And so, do you feel that, reading and contemplation of persons such as Jack O'Keefe and Tony Parsons is helpful? I mean, I've got a room full of people here, who are going, okay, I can intellectually get what's being said, but I know that I'm here and I need to move from this paradigm somewhere else. So how do I, and I don't know where I'm going, so how do I move from this paradigm of self as center?
Yeah, well, you know, it's great, perfect, because the word movement is brilliant, because you could actually say that there only is movement, you know, movement of sound, movement of words, movement of thoughts, movement. You could actually just say everything is just simply movement. The intellectual predator, it's a tough one. Because I was more in, there's a saying that let us teach that the village idiot gets it. So I'm a little bit more of the village idiot gets it kind of character.
Good.
So the intellectuals I've met, it's harder because their mechanism for functioning appears to be through this understanding, through being able to grasp it in a more of a philosophical way and then maybe something else. And it's just the me playing out in that particular way.
Right.
And it's not a problem. It's just that you believe it to be who you are.
Yeah.
You believe it to be real. And therein lies, you know, of course, the suffering and the frustration.
Yeah, well, it's like having gum on your shoe. How do I get the gum off my shoe, right? How do I extract my shoe?
Well, like I said, the question is, well, how do I get rid of the me? You don't get rid of the me. That right. would just be you applying, you know, some sort of practice or an idea or a mechanism to get rid of myself. And then who's going to know that you got rid of yourself? The me? No.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly seems like a paradox, though. You know, it's like, okay,
that's
let's just
the word
go
I was
home.
Looking for. Paradox. Mystery, paradox. Well, it is to a separatism, a separate self, separate being. Right. That is a paradox.
Yeah.
Total. Because nothing is separate. So there's nothing wrong with believing that you're separate and wanting to be separate. There's nothing wrong with that. That's the beauty of the infinite absolute expression. It's infinite. Why not be separate? Why not have that expression?
Well, I can tell you why not. because if I believe that I'm separate, I suffer. I mean, and this I know. If I believe in a separate self around whom life revolves and things happen to against my will, and I don't like this and I wish it were different. I mean, generally, it seems to me that suffering drives the search. And again, and I know that's where we started. Self wants something better.
No, it does. It does. Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with that. I mean, that's how I got slapped in the head. It's almost as if the me fuse is starting to tired of being a me. Just tired of it all. It's exhausting to have a contracted separate energy. It's really hard to hold.
Yeah.
It's just really hard to hold. You know how much freaking work it is.
Yeah.
Come on, everybody out there. We all know. And, you know, you could talk to a 4 or 5-year-old. It's a lot of work to be separate. And I'm not just talking as you mature, but it's a lot to hold. And it is exhausting. And it gets to the point when the suffering is either you've had it, you've had enough, or something just opens for you at that time. But generally, yeah, it's generally deep despair and suffering. Truly.
So are you teaching now?
I have a small group that we meet in Rockland, Maine, and we meet once a month.
The same group you were with before? It was
yeah,
a course of
yeah, yeah, there's a few newcomers there. You know, when... My nature was, you know, not to upset things, not to upset people and stuff. But it's like, really, if this is something that you're seeking and you say you want it and you're doing it, breathe, relax. You're already perfect and whole, and cut the shit out. Just cut it. Stop it. You know, but it's really hard to stop any kind of practice, any kind of words that seem to appear to resonate for you, that make you feel good. And there's nothing wrong with that, but just, it's sort of just look at it, how you're using the information, how you're using it. It's like, you know, ibuprofen or Tylenol, you know, how you're using it. So, I mean, I would just look at that. By the way, I do like ibuprofen. The body.
Well, you know, I asked you about whether or not you were teaching now so that we might use that tactic to get at what's being taught. Is your group still studying A Course in Miracles, or have you
moved
on?
Some of them are, yeah. No, some of them are. I would say that everybody's dabbling in something a little bit, but yeah, the core is still The Course in Miracles and stuff, very much so.
And so you feel like the members of your group are challenging each other to... Well, you know I spent at least 30 years with a course and, you know, kind of halfway did it. So I'm wondering if your group is challenging each other to actually put into practice what's being taught there and in these other texts.
I don't know. I can't answer that question. Yeah, I really can't. You know, to tell someone what's happening is all there is, it's like not good enough. Simply
right.
Not good enough for the me. Just it won't buy it.
Right.
This isn't going to buy it. And also, when we're talking about that, it's the separate personal me that's actually the cloak. I mean, the me is going to take this information and place it somewhere where they can actually digest it, or they'll, you know.
Yeah.
It's like she's full of baloney, you know, whatever. So. You know, isn't going to hear it. Why would the me want to hear that it's you that has to go? You that's,
yeah.
That you're not even real.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have anything to share for the me to get anything.
Yeah.
There's nothing that I'm pointing to that's helpful to me. As a matter of fact, I don't even, you know, it's careful, being careful here not to encourage a separate me self to move, to go deeper, to drive that wedge deeper, which is what happens to most of us.
Well, let me ask you, let me turn the tables on you a little bit. I'll let you be the interviewer. What do you think we should be discussing now?
Well, I like to talk about weather. be a lot of fog today. It was incredible.
That's fascinating.
It's really cold here right now in Maine. So I don't want my summer to be over with. I hear what your question was. But,
yeah, I know you do.
But that's an honest answer. Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
I think what happens is that people, you know, an answer, a question would be, what's tripping you up? Or, what, you know, can be completely transparent.
Yes.
Although, you know, be completely honest, because no one's here to put anybody in any particular place. It's really to look at the me and see where it's sticky, where it's being held on to. So
yeah,
it really perfect. Comes with humility to be able to talk about this. Because, you know, like I said, the me is a built-in mechanism. And not only to physically to survive as a me, as a self, and keep myself in place and so on, but my mental, emotional faculties. God damn it, I've worked on those, you know, to survive, to meet challenges as either your gender or your roles, your work, your family life, you know, all of that.
Yeah.
And you can see that in the world, how the me has worked, you know, there's, you know, kind of thing. So it requires, I would say, that humility, you know? And that would be, you know, are we willing, you know, we've come together, are we willing to just sort of look, you know, look at it. So,
well, let me open it up to questions then. It seems like that's the way that this ought to go. So who has particular questions for Suze? And I'm seeing, Don, you'll help me out with this, right? So what I heard Suze say was it's helpful to work on what do you feel like is keeping you stuck.
Okay. I have something from Dawn.
Okay.
You can see through its antics, though, because we don't want to suffer. Amen. Amen.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that's a question or just sort of a...
Well, I think she was responding. Don, do you want to talk about what you were talking about? I'll let you respond to that. Go ahead, Don.
I was responding to what she was saying about how, you know, there's like nothing wrong with having an ego. And I responded exactly like you did. You said, I can tell you something about it. And I feel the same. It's caused me a whole lot of suffering, and I'm just over it. It's a lot of pain. It's a lot of agony. And I was responding to that, but I don't really have a question. I did notice that she said something that, that really didn't resonate with me, but if I reinterpret it, it does. She says, I wrote it down, there's nothing wrong with our stories. I've been doing a lot of Byron Katie work. And the stories are beliefs and thoughts, and it hurts really bad when I believe them. Now, there's truth to what you said if I don't believe the story. But our habitual, most people, there's like this mechanism inside the brain where we seem to, unless we question the story, we automatically believe it. So there's a whole lot of suffering going on because we're believing our stories. So that's one thing that I was like, I felt a little cringe inside when you said there's nothing wrong with our stories.
Yeah, no, that's a good place.
I mean,
that's a good place. Yeah. No, our stories are beautiful. They really are. It's just that they're not my stories. They're not your stories. They're just stories. They don't belong to anyone. They're just simple expressions. Your unique, absolute, infinite expression is just put together language from an experience, and it's expressed. That's it. And there's no ownership. So you see, there's no one. There's no separate one self.
Dawn, did you have anything else you wanted to say on that? Did you want to follow up? No. Yeah. And again, that's one of those things, then I'll follow up. That's one of those things, Suze, that, you know, intellectually, theoretically, that sounds great. But then, you know, my girlfriend goes, oh my God, your butt looks so big in those jeans. And I have a meltdown, right? you know, my story is that this is not my real story, but my story is I'm struggling with my weight and I think I look like hell and I'd like to meet my next husband and my butt looks big in these jeans. So it breaks my heart when my girlfriend confirms that, right? So I mean, the point being, we do believe our stories. So to say they're all beautiful, they're all wonderful, and we should just let them be what they are, doesn't seem to have within it any pointers. So what am I missing?
Well, then we, yeah, okay. Well, your butt is beautiful. Let's just put it that way. Clarify that right now. you know, when you're a separate self and another separate self says something, has an opinion, it's going to affect, you're going to have me hear their relationship. There's going to be a response. And that's one of the ways to say, yeah, man, shit, I'm being a total me. Because when it's seen that nothing is separate and a response like that comes, it would just like go through, it would like go through you. It would go through you because you know what it was to be a me. You don't really forget that, what that was. And you just smile. I mean, maybe you don't show a smile, but there's a sense of just endearing. It doesn't bother you. Nothing. It just rolls off. And also how you manage your weight and how we manage our bodies with our weight, you begin to come up with a system that actually will begin to work for you. You won't be influenced by other me's. You're not influenced anymore.
That's interesting.
You might be inspired, not by someone else, but inspiration alone. But inspiration alone happens. And I know that people work on their stories. I understand that. But when it's seen that there's nothing separate, the stories are like, I don't know, they're like a butterfly. I mean, I'm not saying, and I'm talking about horrific stories.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about the beautiful stories. But they don't belong to anyone. That's the difference. That's the difference. There isn't, you could say, another way you could say is that there isn't a separate self looking through these eyes. Okay.
Now, if that's not my experience, that there isn't a separate self looking through these eyes,
mm-hmm.
Do I contemplate?
The me is always going to look for an experience, okay?
Yeah.
Experience, what's happening happens prior to any thought.
Right.
Before the me can even kick in and say anything.
Right. Okay.
That's easy enough to prove. You just do it. I mean, it just, you know, it happens way before. Yeah. Way before. So it's almost like pull back. What's happening isn't interfering at all with anything. It's just happening. The me comes in and puts ownership on what's happening. It's too hot, too cold in here. I need to do this. It doesn't smell very good. Didn't we clean yesterday? I mean, the me just goes in like, so, and it becomes your experience. And then, well, my experience is that when we didn't shut all the windows in the house, it seems to own freaking everything. It's just how it operates. That's how separatism operates. But if you wanted to just sit with just what's happening, the me will almost can't tolerate it. We'll almost think it's a joke. will think it's silly. Oh, no worries. It's just happening. Oh, I guess I don't have to do anything. It's just happening. Yeah. You know, and that's the me. That's the me, the sarcastic me. That's the me responding to just what's happening. That's why it's just, it's always there. It's never gone anywhere. There's nothing to acquire, nothing to get. It's always, always, always here. So.
Well, we, I am hearing an echo now. But I will say that we have a practice here that we often adhere to, and that is called loving what is, which sounds a lot like the direction you're pointing. You know, you can talk. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Jacqueline. Is it okay to? Is it okay
to interrupt? Oh, absolutely.
When you are when it's just happening, the mechanics of your body get up and that does stuff. If the body needs thirsty or wants to do its thing, it will just do it. It just gets it. It just does what it does. If something needs to be clean, the body just will go and do it or not, you know, prior to that. But everything that's just happening is happening as unconditional love. It really is. Because you're not placing a condition on what we would call the experience.
Right.
Of moving through life, okay? So if we talk about unconditional love, then of course everything is allowed. And that's it's just what's happening. We don't even identify it as unconditional love because everything is unconditional love, and that becomes embodied. That's why earlier when I said the word what might be appear might come out of my mouth to be beautiful is just a recognition of unconditional love. And I happen to just, this body happened to pinpoint on something. And even when an anger might erupt or a frustration might erupt, these things don't go away. You know, there is a persona that behaves in a particular way, but they don't last. Nothing lasts. It doesn't last. And you don't say, oh, that's still, you know, there isn't a commentator on any of it.
Well, let's talk about that, if you don't mind. Thank you. There isn't a commentator. Well, there may not be a commentator in your head, but this one stays pretty busy. You know, and I don't mean to be trite, and I don't mean to make this difficult. It sounds like, let me just say, it sounds like I'm asking you for a roadmap. Under the guise of trying to be helpful, right? To have an interview, I'm asking you for a roadmap, and I'm hearing from you there is no roadmap. What I'm hearing
That's
from
correct.
You, is, yeah.
<We'll
stop it. laughs> No, and you're telling me from like the destination, right? What it's like to. To be in that experience. So I guess maybe I better change my questions.
No, you know, if there really was something to give you a roadmap or a practice or a focus, it would get us all there. It would get us all there. So whatever I did may not be, I don't know, I really don't get, you know, what the ripeness is.
Yeah.
I don't know what the ripeness is. Because everything is already perfect and whole, it wouldn't matter.
Yeah. I hear that.
So, the me is just, you know, yeah, you're being, you know, it's going to drive at every possible angle, which is good.
Yeah.
Because that's the humility of it all. If we're not able to point to where we can begin to see where, you know, me's navigating me on a roadmap that isn't going to get me there.
Yeah.
Oh, even that's kind of weird what I just said, because it really is the dissolving of the me. He's not going to get you there. Let me just tell you that much.
I hear you. I do. Well, let me ask you about this aspect. Okay. You said that there is still a persona there, and I assume you mean that there is still a personality even after the me hits the road. There's still
my particular sense of humor, your sense of humor, you know. Yeah. Doesn't go. You might have preferences, appears to have preferences. You know, I'll still order chocolate ice cream or caramel, you know. I don't deviate, you know. There's preferences. I get up and go to work every day. Wish I could retire, but you know, those things. It's life. It's life with ease.
Because there's no self to be worried about whether I'm getting what I think I need.
Well, you're not driven by desires. You're not driven by improving and getting. Doesn't mean that I still don't work hard to pay my bills and. You know, things like that. The need for more is not there. The need for less is not there.
Yeah. The need for different is not there.
Yeah. No, it's not. Yeah. It's not. The critical voice of the physical appearance isn't there. And if it is, it comes and goes quickly. It's not. Why would you keep a me that's not helpful? And if I were to use it in those terms, it's the cloak. You know, you don't keep the cloak.
Yeah, I guess
you don't. Yeah, it's at some point you do hear it. It's not the me that hears it. I don't know what to say. What hears it? But we know that. I think I don't need to say anything more about that. Yeah. But you will hear it. You'll hear it. Clear as a bell, you'll hear it.
When you say it, can you be more specific? You get the game, you hear the ego, you hear the me? Or are you talking about you hear a call? I'm just not sure.
If you're a student in the Course in Miracles, in the very first page, nothing real can be threatened, nothing unreal exists. Herein lies the peace of God. You get those two sentences. Nothing real exists. Nothing unreal can be, nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists. If you can get those two, you don't have to go any further on the course. But when you really hear that.
I hear you.
I liked it. I loved it. You know, something happened, you know, for me and many of the words. But, you know. That's what I'm referring to. When you hear it somewhere else. It's not an intellectual, oh, I get it. It's not that. As a matter of fact, it happens in such a split second that you get it that you almost can't even explain it, but you got it. You don't need anything else. You got it. And it isn't applicable. It's not something that you can go out and apply. Because you're already it. It's like the energy, the contracted energy becomes uncontracted.
Yeah, I hear you.
I'm just trying to point here. So
let me ask again if anybody has any particular questions for Suze. George does. George, go ahead.
Hi, Suze.
Hi,
and everyone. You said when you get it, and I think about Eckhart Tolle, who got it, and he wasn't sure that he, what he had until he was studying. And, you know, and what he got was described as an awakening experience. So are there people that have it and don't know that they have it?
I believe so. Yeah. Why not? Really?
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah.
Regina.
Yeah. Hi, Suze.
Hi, Regina. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
Here at Awakening Together, you know, you could say that we study two awakenings, the first being, you know, what people would call from the Course community awakening to the real world, and then the second being awakening beyond perception entirely to what the Course would call heaven or knowledge. And lately we've been looking at a teacher in particular named Bernadette Roberts, who is very clear that she experienced this first awakening to unity consciousness. And then years later, after living that awakening, had the second awakening, which again went beyond perception entirely. And we also recently read Nisargadatta just in the last year of his life. You know, Nisargadatta, you know, talking as if he's awake, as if he's the universe. And then we read just recently a message from him. He says, forget everything I said before. Because he had just experienced the second awakening. So I was just wondering if you had any thoughts at all on this idea of two awakenings. That's it. That's my question.
Yeah, I guess if we use the term awakening to reflect an opening, the first one you said was an awakening to this world. Yes, am I correct on that, though? I want to be correct on that.
Well, you know, I mean, I think you know the Course from what I've been hearing. So I was using the Course language, awakening to the real world or to true perception. Okay. You know, some people call it awakening to unity consciousness rather than separate consciousness. So that's the first awakening. And then the second awakening is beyond, you know, they say beyond perception entirely.
It appears... Sequentially, it appears that there's levels, but I have to agree with your last statement, forget everything, because I don't know, I really don't know if all the steps are necessary to be taken. I really don't. And because if that were to come down to say that steps need to be taken, then that would be a me, a separate self, talking about a, you know, a type of ladder, I don't want to get my words right, that it would be something sequentially that have to be acquired in order to get to the next level. And that's not true. That's not true at all. I am aware that there are some characters, some folks that get to a particular understanding and they're totally fine with that. And they're going to live their life from that perspective. You know, to be honest with you. And it appears that others are like, this isn't it. There's more, you know, there's something else or something else or something else. Just keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going. And I also think that's just part of the wonder of the infinite, that you're going to see the different levels. You are going to see that, those expressions. I mean, I have changed my language of how I express this. So, and I would imagine in another, let's say in the world of time and space, that it might change again. It might change again, because it keeps deepening. There isn't any me deepening it. It just deepens and deepens and deepens. I happen to be a gardener and do a lot with nature. That doesn't mean I'll stay that the rest of my physical days here, but it comes through in that particular way for me. It could be anything. You know, it could be anything. But perception, if I'm going to function in this world and do the work that I do and with my family and stuff, I will be holding on to particular perceptions just so I can engage and relate. And then there's others that it's full on, you know, all perception gone, perceiving gone. So.
I do hear you say, I think I hear you say that there's no finish line.
Well, infinite.
Oh, yeah, infinite.
Yeah. We couldn't. We can't. So yeah. because being separate needs to create a space, needs to create and to be separate is to create a space that I'm here and you're there. But also when we get that, but it also creates a space emotionally, intellectually, socially, spiritually, it creates equally the same space. Okay. It holds a separate space. So when that collapses or falls away or dies, whatever words people are using that work for them, and nothing is separate, it's really when you start living.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. Why? I can't answer why. I can't answer why the other than the absolute's infinite, it will play itself in infinite ways. But you don't, the stories and the pain and stuff don't belong to you anymore. They're there. You might refer to your stories to share, or you might spring something from the stories, but they lose their juice. They do lose their juice.
So do you still have thoughts that say, hey, I'm a me and I'm pissed off right now, or, you know, hey, I'm a me and I'm cold and I'm needed to change, or whatever?
Well, that would just be a, when the body needs something, it's going to do it, you know. Do you blame the weather? Maybe for a moment, just out of your habits, but no. You begin to laugh, actually, at some of the behavior or the ideas. But I'll give you an example. On Fridays, I really look forward to leaving work at 3:30, and the way it got played out, we were going to have to be much later than 3:30, and I just kind of watched the boiling. I don't do anything about it. You know, I just watched it and I knew it was going to go sooner or later, comes and goes. Was that a me watching it coming and going, or was it just awareness itself aware that it will come and go? Okay.
I take it, given you answered the question, you asked the question, didn't answer it. Well, I don't know what to take from that.
Well, you asked me, you know, these things come up. Yeah, I mean, if your personality is to say, damn it, I said, get the oil changed in the car now.
Right.
But it's nothing, there isn't a me holding on to it. There isn't a me that's going to churn on that, get boiled by that, or use it for ammunition down the road. Oh, here we go again.
Right.
No, this is the 15th time I've said, there isn't any of those habits and patterns. Without, you'd have to have a me to have them. Yeah. I'm right. Damn it. You know?
Yeah.
You know, the me works very hard at being right, working to be hard at being right, to get it right. That's how you're taught. That's how it's raised.
That's just the nature of the beast. Yes?
Beautiful as it is, it just is. It just, you know, what are you going to do? It is a contracted energy that takes place very early on. I think it's 18 months when scientists have studied children, little young ones, toddlers, that they can know that that's a mirror reflection of themselves. Prior to that, it's just they don't know what that other, that there is no other.
Right.
But, so that starts early.
So it's all, it's by and large conditioned behavior.
Yeah. 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 Tremendous amount of conditioned behavior. How are you going to, the world operates on conditioned behavior. This world does. Yeah. No, really does. So when you start to realize that there's something else, you know, something else, what happens to the me is that something else becomes something more, or there's something that I'm missing that I need to get that will make living, functioning be much better. Or depending on who you are, you might want to be a spiritual teacher. I don't know. Make you bigger.
Yeah.
Make you have something that you can give to others that's special, because me is special. Every single me thinks it's special. And it's its own life. So, but it's taken to be real, and that's the problem.
George.
Thank you. You know, I have no idea why I do what I do. And I have a sense that I'm being done. I'm not doing, I'm being done. And I'll give you an example. Probably 20 years ago, somebody put A Course in Miracles in my hand, and I attended a few classes and didn't really click with the instructor, so I quit going to class. But I kept reading that book for several years because I didn't know there was a course community out there. And it was extremely difficult for me to understand. But I kept reading the damn book. Reading the book, and I have no idea why I did that. I just did it. And so I kind of feel like I was being done, okay? I was being drawn. So could you comment on that?
Yeah, well, I mean, you're right. I spoke earlier about it just kind of like the fizz, the air in the balloon of me starts to just lose it. You know, it's starting to dissipate. It's just an almost a natural tiring of it. Of being a me. And as far as whether or not you're drawn to it, you're just drawn to it, yeah? Just drawn to it. The book kind of lands on you, you're drawn to it. The readings do something, right? They do something. I don't know if they did something intellectual or they did something visceral for you, but one way or the other, if you're reading it and you stayed reading it, it did something. It was very palpable for you to do it, to digest it. And it's not a one course meal. You know what I mean? It's something that has to be repetitively. And how long are you with it or have been with it, the course?
Well, probably 20 years ago. And I studied it for several years. And I did find a group to join with. And we studied particularly the lessons on a yearly basis for several years. We would go over the lessons each year and meet together, but then, you know, it's been quite a while since I've picked up the course, but you know, because I've been drawn to other things, but it's still stuck there. And I consider that you know, a very formative experience in this process. So I just you know, I've come to realize I have no idea why I do what I do. I just do it. And I don't know why.
That's fine. Don't need to know, do we? Really don't. I mean, you're not going out and, you know, cutting down your neighbor's cornfield. So, I mean, why wouldn't we do what we do? It doesn't need a me to be attached to what's happening. It just simply is happening. It appears to be a participatory thing because we have individual bodies, but really it's an expression. These bodies are all expressions of the absolute infinite in form. So keep going, you know, really.
Sus, let me ask you, and this relates to, I think, to a question that George asked earlier. you know, in the old days, you had a Buddha, you had a Jesus, you had a Nisargadatta, you had a Ramana. But, I mean, you know, you can count them on two hands. But there sure seem to be a lot of people waking up these days. And I wonder if you'd like to comment on that.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly is apparently available. I mean, it's quite big. There's, you know, with the internet and iPods and podcasts and, you know, everything that's available, it's certainly a lot out there. People are certainly drawn to it. At the same time, the me is becoming a bigger me than it's ever been before, too. Mm. So, you know, it's a very dualistic world here, apparently, anyways. It appears to, you know. So it does seem like the two ends are getting more available on either end, whichever way you go, so to speak. I don't really have... And, you know, an interpretation of it as to why, I just know it's incredibly available. Mm-hmm. And you can point to different things and say why, but what's really quite fun about it all is that it's no longer sanctioned to ashrams or yogis and very select sect places. It's open, wide open to anyone and everyone that's being pulled in that particular way. Or that seems to have a lean in that particular way. But, you know, it does have a crooked path as well, just as a dualistic nature would. There's a misuse of it as well, you know.
To get something
I'm not so versed in it, but you hear about it. You know, people get duped, you know.
Sure.
The me gets duped. And but I would say exciting times, but I think in any time, why would we not say exciting times? So, yeah, you see how that works?
Yeah.
You know, the me wants to point to direction and answers and it's true. I mean, it is true about the roadmap, but there isn't one, because if there was, you know, Buddha, Jesus, you know, all the different names that we know, they're pretty much saying very similar what we're saying now. But you can see, you know, I mean, I love I'm paraphrasing, but it's accredited from Jesus, you know, to lose yourself, to find yourself.
Yeah.
It's like, what does that mean? I remember that. I'm like, yeah, that makes total sense to me. But what does it mean? How do I lose myself to find myself? You know, I could... It's like a fish almost saying, I think I know where the water is.
Right.
Yeah. That's what it feels like. That's what it felt like for me.
Yeah, you know, nonetheless, there seems to be a progression here. I mean, you know, your understanding, your recognition is not the same now as it was in January of 2016. My understanding, my recognition is not the same as it was in January 2016. So it seems like there's, and again, I know you just talked with Regina about, well, there's no steps. You don't go, you know, A to B to C to D. But it seems like there's an ever-opening understanding.
It continues. You're right. No, Jacqueline, you're right. It continues. It continues. And the expression of it will change, perhaps, or not. But it continues. It really does continue. I can't say that it's, you know, once it's opened, there's a point I would have said where there's this waffling kind of thing that goes on, perhaps, you know. But at some point, there's enough light that's come in. If I can use it metaphorically speaking, there's enough light that's come in that it's open now.
It just does its thing from there, right?
Pretty much. Once the me is no longer the operating tool to navigate the life that you think we are, once that really starts to fall away, you don't go back and pick it up again. No, just don't. I remember being in this at a satsang with Jan Fraser. It's a great, great website, yeah. Great work, great. She's a beautiful writer, beautiful writer. And I said to her, I remember raising my hand, I go, don't you miss her? She's worked so hard. And I remember her looking at me like I had 10 eyes. And, you know, she's very, very quiet and just said, no, you know, no. So there is the survival mechanism to hold on to the me. Yeah. Really is. Really is. I mean, the me will defend itself. Which you're doing quite well in this interview. So, I mean, you know,
thank you.
Yeah, no, this is important. This is important because there is a defense for the, of course it would. Of course it would. Do you think the me is just going to dissolve? Mm. No, it's the one that started the search. It started the search and it will end the search. It will find it. It will find what it needs or it thinks it, you know, that's thinking of it. So, you know, it's not a tough nut to crack at all. It's just that it's not real. It's like I want to whisper to you and say, there isn't a Santa Claus, okay? Just go along with it, okay?
I hear you, Ed. That's yeah. Great. That's great.
We'll all get there. We'll all get there.
I have no doubt.
Yeah. And we are there already. So it's just the dismantling of the me. That's the best word I can come up with.
We have you for a limited time. We have another. Jay's disappointed to find out Santa's not real. Sorry to burst your bubble there, Jay. Don't play this in front of the kids. we do have about 15 minutes left, and Sue welcomes your questions. So earlier she said, when I was asking her what I should ask her, she said it's helpful to have someone really honestly say, well, this is where I'm stuck. So anybody, I invite you to do that. Go ahead, Sue. Sue's, I'm sorry.
Well, you know, I've heard people talk about, you know, I have a family that I need to focus on and my work that I'm focusing on to, you know, develop myself more and, you know, bring a greater income into my family or for myself. And then I have a spiritual aspiration. And I was like, there's no difference. There's absolutely no difference between any of it. So, and that is sometimes doesn't go over too well with the me, because the whole spiritual piece is to grow inwardly and to be a better something or to have a deeper understanding if there is a God or whatever it is. And then my life is over here. And hopefully that will move in this particular way, the two of them, to make everything better. But it's just, you're just working up a really good story of the me for a better life, you know? So.
Well, actually, I realize I do have a question. Do you mind if I ask?
Jay? No, please go ahead.
I've heard you mention several times in the satsang tonight, Suze, that building a better self is a trap most people get into. Mm-hmm. I've noticed that the personality does change as I release blocks, as I face unconscious stuff, let it heal, that my expression does change. Like one of the things in my own character that's dropped recently was like a lot of sarcasm. Mm-hmm. It was kind of, it caused a problem in a relationship of mine. But I think I've had that like maybe dwindling, but it sort of fell away. Mm-hmm. but I sort of worked on it. So maybe I was trying to improve the self, but in your own life or maybe in people you've worked with, don't you see that happen though, when people go deeper, that stuff just falls away, like unproductive expressions or fear-based mannerisms or, you know, that kind of stuff. Do you think that falls away, or what is your comment on all that as it relates to that versus improving the self as a trap? Like, do you have any comments on that?
Sure, Jay. I'll just speak from what I can recall in my experiences, very much similar to yours. When I first started to go inward, the first thing that came about were habits. Habits that were shame and criticizing others or myself. A lot of that, you know, I started to see it. Once I started to see it, so it was a little bit of a cleanup, that I would say. You know, that seemed to just apparently take place without me even saying, okay, let's clean up the personality first. It just, that was actually what happened first for me, was cleaning up the personality, basically. And at the same time, I was still having these experiences, but I couldn't cross-reference any of it because they were just so different. But yeah, I would definitely say that there's a cleanup, not for everyone, of course, but there's the cleanup and then there's the growing up, you know? I can't say that.
You mean about realizing Santa's not real? I'm just joking.
I'm sorry. That's all right. And I will tell you, the Tooth Fairy doesn't exist either. So don't.
Oh, darn it.
I know. I know. I'm sorry. Okay. But you can still celebrate. Okay. I think I can't say that either of those really point to the dismantling of the me, but they were the beginnings of making things easier for me. Okay. You know, I just, I was a, do you ever see those rubber bands balls that have those gazillion rubber bands and they're just all rubber bands and they make a big ball? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I used to work at Office Max corporate headquarters. Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, if I were to pick an object and say, Seuss, what do you think you are? That would be the one I would pick out and pull. So I was a knot, you know, lots and lots of stuff from early childhood on. So. That was my character, just to give you an idea. So there was a lot of stuff that fell away and needed to, probably, I guess.
So as you said, you seem to draw a distinction between cleaning up those habits and growing up.
Yeah.
What do you mean when you say growing up?
Oh, that's a good question, Jacqueline, because we use that a lot. Grow up. I would say maturing in less self-criticism, less self-shame, less me. Okay.
Yeah.
So that opening, so that which you are can actually begin to naturally express itself, because the contracted energy of a separate self, me, expresses itself as a me most of the time, as me. There's times when it's not, but then we're unaware of that.
So it seems to me then that maybe this growing up is like, get over yourself.
Yeah. I would say something like that. I think that's great. Yeah, I think that's perfect. Get over yourself. Yeah. I like that.
so that there's room.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I like the metaphor of the light coming in. The light is always there, but if you're the cloak becomes the veil. The veil gets thinner, stretches, becomes the cobwebs, and it's gone. So, but it does need that ability to let the light in. Is it Leonard Cohen has a great song, "It Only Takes a Crack to Let the Light In." I always love that song.
Lovely. Yeah. In fact, what we're talking about might be referred to as purification.
I'm not sure. The only word I know about purification is like the Baptists, you know, that, you know, to drink the water and purify
yourself. Yeah. Seems like the Course says something about purification. I can't, if anybody here knows the quote, y'all tell me, because I'm not coming up with it.
Well, the thing is, because even what we would call the impure is still pure in the absolute, you know?
Sure, but again, it's like, get over yourself. I mean, you have to quit believing in Santa Claus to become an adult. You have to loosen the grip, get a crack in the veil.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
Suze, we have 6 minutes left, so let me just ask you what you would leave us with.
Oh, Jacqueline. what would I love to leave? Well, first of all, thank you. Thank you very much. As you know, it's really fun to talk in this particular way. It's really fun to share in this particular way. So that, I'm joyful, because it's just, you know. So thank you for that opportunity, all of you, and Regina, for all the work you all do behind the scenes to allow this to happen. I really do appreciate that. What's happening is happening. You know, we're having these great conversations back and forth, and it's the one infinite self expressing itself, you know, back and forth, and just enjoying language itself and sound and our interpretations, our stories that we're working or not, or this is where I came from. I think the beauty is in the aliveness of life itself. And you can't point to any of it, because it's everything. So, love y'all. What am I going to say, you know?
So get out there and have a good time.
You just let that crap come and go. Don't even worry about it. No, yeah.
That works for me.
You'll know what to do. It will just happen. The expression of life itself will take care of life itself. And I do. That is true. So life takes care of life. And you are life.
Yay. That's perfect.
All right. Yeah. All right. See you all. Thank you.
Thank you again, Suze. You're fabulous. And seeing how much you enjoy this, I'm going to have to invite you back on a regular basis to just, you know.
To check in. Please feel free to answer questions or shoot me some questions if you have them as they arise. So,
okay. And maybe Dawn can post your email again. That's okay, right? If people email you, Suze?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'm sorry. I was looking up at Dawn. Dawn, kudos to you for helping us out with all the techie stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, she's good at her job.
All right, everyone. Good night. Sweet dreams.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye. You're welcome.